If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps me out a lot. Cheers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What does it mean to write epic fantasy? How can us authors have stories with massive stakes, yet still create sympathy for individual characters? That's what I'm going to explore in today's episode of the Novel Analyst Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Novel Analyst Podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, and every episode I analyze a story to help you become a better writer. This episode is titled The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson, Crafting an Epic Fantasy. And of course, if you haven't read The Way of Kings, Book 1 in the Stormlight Archive, spoiler warning, because there will be spoilers ahead. So, super quickly, before I get into this episode, which I've been wanting to do a long time, I love Brandon Sanderson, he's my favourite author at the moment, and I read Way of Kings, I think about a year ago. I'm going to be launching some new cool stuff soon. So, first of all, I've just launched a new YouTube channel, where every weekday for the rest of 2019, and hopefully much longer beyond that, I will be posting a 2 to 5 minute quick storytelling tip video. So each of these videos will explore a particular aspect of storytelling. I might do an episode on dialogue. I might do an episode on creating suspense through the type of sentences you're writing. I might do an episode on structuring series. Who knows what's going to happen? But if you just go to YouTube and type in Jed Hearn Writer, that's J-E-D-H-E-R-N-E, or just click the link in the show notes, you can check out my brand new YouTube channel. Like I said, new videos coming every weekday. Also, I may be launching a new podcast soon, so to keep up to date with that and all my other writing projects, go to jedhearn.com/club, that's jedhearn.com/club, and that will let you sign up to my exclusive Jed Hearn Reader Club, which not only will give you 5 free sci-fi and fantasy short stories written by myself, but you will also stay up to date with all the cool new things that I am doing soon. So I would encourage you to go to jedhearn.com/club, and again, the link is in the show notes. All right, let's get into the episode. So, probably the logical place to start is by defining epic fantasy. I always try to make sure that I define the key terms I'm arguing, or not arguing, that I'm exploring in these episodes, because then we're on the same page, you and I. So, according to Wikipedia, always a great source, but I thought it would be interesting to start here, quote, epic fantasy is a subgenre of fantasy. Great, that's really useful. Defined either by the epic nature of its setting or by its epic stature of its characters, themes, or plot, end quote. Thanks a lot, Wikipedia. That was really not useful at all. Not really a massive fan of circular definitions that use the word you want to define as part of the definition. So I think what we need to do now is dig into that whole idea of epic. So how I think about it is that epic means extraordinary, something beyond the ordinary. Now, I think that's a bit more of a useful framework to work with here, because it sort of implies that epic fantasy is fantasy that is concerned with things bigger than the individual. It's concerned with worldwide stakes, conflicts, and consequences. It's kind of the difference between a story where a character has to assassinate a king because the king killed his brother, and a story where a character has to assassinate a king because the king is going to explode a volcano that will destroy the entire world. It's a big volcano. So, in the introduction, I mentioned that there's this balancing act between these big worldwide stakes, yet still wanting readers to root for characters who are ostensibly cogs in this bigger quest. So you want readers to care. That's just a given for whatever story you write. You want readers to give a damn about what's happening. And you probably want them to give a damn about the characters. Because, great, I'm sure if you're an excellent author, you can make readers care purely about the world and purely about the reader saving the world, but you probably also want to have some personal attachment to your individual characters within that. The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson does this super well. And in fact, I'd argue that this balance between the kind of micro focus on the characters and the macro focus on saving the whole world actually makes the story feel more epic. More epic. So, The Way of Kings is the first book in the Stormlight Archive. That's twice I've almost stuffed up the saying of Stormlight Archive. Stormlight Archive by Brandon Sanderson. And it's set on this world of stone and storms, where these massive high storms, these huge, like, kind of cyclonic events sweep across the rocky terrain. So much that they've shaped the way that the world is. So animals hide in their shells during these storms, trees pull in branches during these storms, grass retracts into the ground during these storms, and basically it's just had a massive effect on the world. And one of the interesting areas within this world is this landscape called the Shattered Plains. So if you could imagine in your mind a collection of plateaus with big chasms between them, and the only way to get between the plateaus would be either to jump or to use bridges, that's basically the Shattered Plains, this big landscape of plateaus with chasms between them. And there's a big war being fought there, and it's the focus of this first book in the Stormlight Archive. Now, as you can kind of tell by that brief description, the story is massive. It took Brandon Sanderson over 10 years to develop this. And my edition of the book that I've got here has over 1,100 pages. It's massive. It took me about a month to read, I think. It's just huge. And the story is only the first book in a predicted 10-part series. But despite that giganticness, the story actually starts in a relatively minor, small-scale place, relatively intimate compared to what happens after. So, after the prologue and the prelude, which granted kind of imply this larger scale but don't really come into focus until later, we follow Kaladin in a battle. And Kaladin is this spearman who leads a small squadron into the fight. Now, this fight is big, but our focus is relatively small. Because at this stage, there's a couple of dozen people in his squad, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, it's kind of sizable, but it's not a massive battle. You don't have thousands and thousands of people in here. You know, this is kind of just like a skirmish, if you like. So, during this battle, Kaladin is captured after he kills a certain person, and he's made a slave. And again, it's relatively minor. He's a slave to sort of one person who plans to sell them, along with a handful of other slaves. Then, he joins another army fighting on the Shattered Plains, that landscape I mentioned before, with all those plateaus with chasms separating them. That's the Shattered Plains. And here, as a slave, he becomes a bridgeman. So, this is a really interesting part of the world building that I love. How it works is the only way for the army that is fighting on the Shattered Plains to attack their enemy, who is hiding within the Shattered Plains, is through the use of bridge carriers. So they need portable bridges that allow them to cross between plateau to plateau, to cross over the chasms, because you don't want to go down into those chasms because there's massive monsters down there. It's just not a pleasant time in general. So Kaladin becomes a bridgeman. And if you can basically imagine 100 people all carrying a massive portable bridge and putting it down so that a whole army can cross over onto a plateau, then running over the bridge, dragging it up, going over to the other side of the plateau, putting it down so the army can cross into another plateau, and then doing that dozens and dozens of times every day, that's a bridgeman. Sounds pretty crappy, and it is. So, what you can see here, which is particularly interesting, is that now the army that Kaladin is part of, or enslaved to, really, is a lot bigger than the one he was in before. And now, he's not just part of a small squadron, he's part of a crew of hundreds, maybe thousands of bridgemen. There's like dozens of bridge crews total. And what you can see here, and this is important, this is an important point, is that the scale has increased. Kaladin has gone from being part of a kind of small-time skirmish where he's carrying about a dozen people to massive battles. We're talking, there's 10 armies who are fighting separately against the main foe here, who are hidden within the Shattered Plains. So the scale has massively increased. Likewise, Kaladin's actions have much bigger ramifications. So in the early chapters, we saw him use unconventional tactics to give his squad an advantage in the battle. So for instance, he and his spear squad would just find like a really tall hill, just sit up there in a circle, all their spears facing outwards. They wouldn't waste their energy running after the enemy. They just let the enemy charge up at them, where they could easily dismiss them using their superior tactics. Smart thinking. So Kaladin, as a slave, tries to implement these same unconventional mindset to battle. So normally how it works is the bridgemen are on the front line running across these plateaus towards the enemy who are on other plateaus, and the enemy just use arrows to pick them off, and then bridges collapses and it's just a bad time. So what Kaladin does is as his squadron is running towards the enemy and he sees that they're about to fire arrows at him, he gets his squadron to tilt the bridge onto the side so that it's a massive shield that protects all 100 people who are in the squad. It's a pretty clever idea, and it's a great moment of awesome within the novel when he does this. However, when he implements these new tactics, he's punished, because now the bridge carriers aren't taking the heat from the actual army. And that means that the higher up people in the army who don't like slaves being protected over their soldiers leave Kaladin in a high storm, which is just this massive, horrendous, cyclonic style event that sweeps across the land. And he survives. But the point being here is that the bigger scale that we've moved from a small scale skirmish where Kaladin could get away with his tactics without being punished to a massive war where his tactics have huge ramifications. This bigger scale has created bigger consequences. Bigger scale, bigger consequences. And this escalation continues. So Kaladin gains more notoriety amongst the army, even though he's still a slave, which puts more pressure on him and means that his actions have bigger consequences. A great way to think about this is, you know, let's say that Kaladin in the first bit of the book is sort of like a politician who doesn't have any way to communicate with the world. I'm not saying he's a politician, but just think about this analogy for a second. So a politician who has like a megaphone is probably not going to be able to scale up their interactions, and they're probably going to struggle to get into power. If you give that politician the internet, now they have more power. Probably won't be a good thing, knowing most politicians, but the point being here is that this is what's happened to Kaladin. He's been put on a bigger stage, if you like, and now his actions have massive consequences, and they continue to grow as his influence develops throughout the book. So he goes from kind of this lower place to a place where he doesn't have at the start, he doesn't have much control, he doesn't have a lot of influence, and then as he progresses, his influence gets bigger and bigger and bigger, which you can kind of say is just sort of what's done in all stories. And I would agree, it is all done in a lot of stories. But I think it's particularly relevant given the whole genre thing of epic fantasy we're talking about here, because this is the essence of epic fantasy to me. It's all about individuals changing things on a global scale. If you think about the Mistborn trilogy by Brandon Sanderson, which I did an episode on a while back, you can check that out. That is all about an individual who starts the series just trying to get by as a street urchin. And by the end of the series, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's been massive changes to the world. Massive changes to the world that are affecting millions of people. So it's about individuals changing things on a global scale. And in The Way of Kings, this culminates in this final battle where Kaladin saves thousands of soldiers stranded on a plateau, signifying his character change from a guy who hated nobus at the start of the novel to a person who realizes that all life has value. So, what can we take away from this? Because I've really just picked out a very tiny portion of this novel. You know, Kaladin is only one of three major viewpoint characters throughout this thing. So that just gives you an idea of the scale of this. But I think the key point here is this idea of progressing from the micro to the macro. So to me, good epic fantasy, and you know, this is just one man's thoughts on this, so definitely don't take this as gospel, but to me, good epic fantasy progresses from the micro to the macro in a way that no other genre really can. What I mean by that is that great epic fantasy, the kind of stuff that Brandon Sanderson writes, starts with this character and he gets you to care about the character in a kind of small, quote unquote, small setting before that character is plunged into this massive world. And this character kind of becomes your focal point as a reader to guide you through this world. Because if you just went straight into the massive world and it was gigantic and everything had massive consequences, your mind would probably be blown. But by starting with a small character who readers can relate to and empathize with and care about, and then progress them through this world in a way that their actions go from having small consequences, medium consequences, massive consequences, global consequences. You create this sense of epic scale through transitioning from kind of the personal stakes through to the global stakes. You create epic scale, and that creates an epic fantasy. Now, there's so many things, like I mentioned, that I haven't even touched upon in this episode because it's huge. I think one of the interesting other points about this book, which is relevant to my point about this structure idea as a whole, is that Sanderson has said he plotted this book as a trilogy. So it's split into three parts, and each part, he said he sort of plotted it as a complete arc. Now, I think that's quite an interesting way to tackle this, because I think epic fantasy can sometimes struggle from being too big too quickly. So by breaking the book up into kind of these three trilogies, it allows readers to sort of enter into that world slowly. It's the difference between diving into a freezing cold pool compared to just like slowly inching your way in and like gradually acclimatizing to it so that by the time you get in it, it's not too bad. So overall, The Way of Kings is just a fantastic novel. It's, you know, I consider it kind of one of the standards in epic fantasy today. And the fact that only three books in the Stormlight archive of a predicted 10-book series have come out is amazing. I have only read The Way of Kings so far, but I definitely intend to read the following books in the series. And I can't wait to see what Brandon Sanderson does next. Thank you for listening to the Novel Analyst podcast. Like I mentioned at the start of the episode, I have a lot of exciting new things that have come out and maybe some new things that are coming out soon. First of all is the YouTube channel. So if you click the link in the show notes or just go to Jed Hearn Writer on YouTube, and that's J-E-D-H-E-R-N-E, you can check out my YouTube channel where every weekday from now on, I am posting a quick 2 to 5 minute video on an aspect of the craft of writing. So that might be an episode on suspense. It might be an episode on world building, which is something we touched upon in this particular podcast episode. New episodes every weekday on that, so be sure to check it out. I am really keen to see what you think of it, and if you enjoy this podcast, you will enjoy that as well. Also, I may be launching another podcast, so to keep up to date with that, please go to jedhearn.com/club. That's JEDHERNE/club. And you can join my Reader Club email newsletter, which will keep you up to date with all my writing projects. Plus, a little bonus for you here, when you sign up, I will give you 5 free sci-fi and fantasy short stories that I've written. Plus, you'll also get like an exclusive welcome series where I tell you about my writing journey and my favorite authors. There might, little PS here, even be a little article in there that I wrote on Brandon Sanderson. Actually, it's not very little. It's just an article. All right. Thanks for listening. As always, you know, you can send me an email, link is below, with your thoughts, and I will see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.